Roger, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
So looking at the current situation in Mosul, Iraqi troops are claiming they've made some significant gains in the region. What's the current situation look like?
Well, they're continuing to, they being the Iraqi security forces, are continuing with their efforts to retake West Mosul. That's the last vestiges of Islamic State within the city. But given the built-up nature of urban terrain, any kind of military operation in those areas are going to be difficult. And on top of that, Islamic State has had several years to construct their defences, which makes it even more difficult. These kind of military operations always favour the defender rather than the attacker.
What would these kind of successes actually mean for ISIL's overall situation if they are losing control of Mosul?
Well, I mean, they're losing control of Mosul. It's just a matter of when. We're seeing already forces in Syria are doing some of the preliminary operations for the retaking of Raqqa. It's just a continuation of the successful implementation of the anti-Islamic State campaign in Iraq and Syria. They're on a downward trajectory, and it just shows once again that once security forces of sufficient size and unity raid against these kind of forces, that their demise will eventually occur. It's just the latest in a series over the past 12 months of significant tactical and operational level defeats of Islamic State.
You know, that's quite an interesting point you bring up there, Roger. These kind of forces, what is it in particular about ISIL, Islamic State, that you find inherently unsustainable?
Well, they have no sovereignty for a start. They've got limited support. They're geographically limited. They had a shock value. They were very well organised. They had a degree of unity, but these organisations need to maintain momentum in order to maintain a support base and relevance, and one feeds the other, obviously. Once their momentum is halted, then the end point is pretty well predetermined. It's just the amount of time and blood that is expended in reaching it. The United States support for the Iraqi forces and its air campaign in Syria has been one of attrition. That's a long-term military campaign. I think it's the appropriate military campaign because it lessens your direct engagement with the enemy and uses your advantages while not exposing yourself to kind of military deficiencies that can be exploited by the enemy.
And just again to sort of focus in on one of the points you mentioned there, unity. How significant has infighting amongst Islamic State forces, how significant has that been towards their defeat?
Well, I don't think Islamic State's shown a surprising degree of unity throughout. I think the disunity that that we've seen has really adversely impacted the Syrian-based opposition forces. There was disunity between Islamic State and a range of other actors earlier on, around 2013. Since then, their lines have been relatively fixed, and we've seen the disunity exhibited more by the non-Islamic State jihadist groups in Syria. So for Islamic State's part, one of, I suppose, the interesting aspects that we'll probably look at in retrospect is the degree of cohesion, relative cohesion, that they've been able to maintain over an extended period when they've been under significant military pressure.
And obviously, Islamic State, you seem to indicate there it's only really a matter of time until we see the end of Islamic State as something of a unified front. But other non-state actors within the region, are they going to continue being a fairly pressing concern?
Well, listen, I think the not only non but semi-state actors are also going to be one element of the ongoing security threat in the region. I mean, the conditions that give rise to these groups are beyond the fixing of external agencies. They need the requirement of national governments to address, and they haven't shown a great willingness to do that. We're not even sure what Islamic State, after its defeat and the retaking of its territory, is going to look like. The organisation will be broken. It'll be scattered, but there are going to be some elements who remain in the networks that they've maintained or established and maintained during years of fighting. They're not going to go away in any hurry, so we're going to probably see a lay period for a period of time while they re-equip and work out what their next strategic objectives are going to be. But it's going to be the defeat of Rump Islamic State, but it's not going to be the defeat of jihadist groups totally.
And I would imagine for some of the external actors that we mentioned there, they're probably not going to be in any hurry to leave either in quite a few situations. Any sort of final bits of advice you might pass on to external actors like the United States, like Russia, like Australia, even at this point in the fight?
Well, listen, I think most, each country's got different strategic aims. The US has been quite careful in graduating the kind of assistance that they've been providing, staying away as much as possible from the direct contact battle, which means your ability to disengage yourself from the campaign at its conclusion is much, much easier than has been previously, or if you've taken a much more active role. As far as Australia is concerned, we have trainers and the air component. Once those elements are no longer required, again, it's relatively easy for us to disengage. The Russians probably less so in Syria. They've had decades-long bilateral defence agreement with the Syrian government. They're there. They have been there for the long haul. They're going to be there for the long haul in the future, and they've signed a long-term basing agreement for their air base in Syria and another agreement about expanding their naval footprint in Tartu. So I think the Russians are there for the long haul.
Well, Roger, thank you very much. Really do appreciate you joining us, having a bit of a chat with us about this one.
My pleasure.